Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Excited to share with you what we have coming up on this week's show. Later on, Candace is here to talk about, is it okay for a girl to ask out a guy? So, and in this particular instance, it's kind of those once in a while things like the Sadie Hawkins deal. I mean, are we going to be super legalistic about this? Is it appropriate? Isn't it? So Candace is going to weigh in. Then for our culture segment, we have the fabulous Glenn Stanton back. He is now the author of the brand new, just released, Loving My LGBT Neighbor book. So we're going to have an interesting and spirited discussion of what does that look like? How do we act Christ-like in our interaction with our gay and lesbian friends while still holding to the truth. So that'll be a good conversation. And here we are for our roundtable. I've got a group of fun and feisty folks. We have introducing Hannah, first time to the Boundless Show, as well as Brandon and Micah. Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Very good to have you here. So in light of this culture segment, we're not going to talk specifically about the issue of, you know, how does that play out in loving our gay and lesbian neighbors? But we thought it would be fun to kind of broaden the topic to say, what are just those things where we recognize our own comfort zones and what we are and are not willing to do in stretching ourselves, whether that is activities, whether that is relationships, mm-hmm. whether that is, you know, ideas, what are those things that we just find ourselves not, you know, we're kind of stuck there. We're not willing to nudge ourselves out of that for, you know, sometimes for good, but also for bad. And so I want to just start by throwing out the question, where are you actually stuck in your ways? If you had to self-evaluate and be, you know, think of yourself as that old fuddy-duddy person that you don't want to be, where you're just stuck and things where you've kind of gotten into your routine or your rut, or what would you say? What are the things that you kind of hold to as your patterns that maybe are things that you could stretch yourself in a bit?
I'd say I tend to be a homebody a mm-hmm. lot of times. Like I kind of get in the routine of going to work and coming home, and just I've got a young family at home, so mm-hmm. I tend to just sort of just, yeah, I don't really go out as much anymore. So I know that can sometimes be a bit of a,
yeah, so kind of your routine.
Yeah, my routine.
Sticking to yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is tragic because you're such a fun person. So
well,
you're
thank
really
you.
Robbing people of
yeah,
that.
I probably am.
You
yeah,
are.
Totally.
You are totally. And, you know, I have to just talk to you about email distribution here at work if I'm going to talk to you. So that's just boring. Exactly. All right, Brandon, what about you?
I think when friends for me is probably that point where I have a very small group of friends. And once I'm comfortable with someone, I don't tend to want to continue to get to know people or to put myself out of my comfort zone in that relationship. So I just kind of will retract back into those key kind of relationships that I have. And so I think that's limiting because, especially in like a church setting, I'll stay with that same group of people and I won't, I'll talk to people, but I won't go out of my way.
Okay.
To like
you don't want to invite new people into the circle.
No, I don't. Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds bad, but it's just the way.
That is bad. It's terrible.
Yeah, totally.
Shame on you. Okay.
It's just hard for me to to reach out.
Sure. Okay.
I'd say probably definitely friends. And instead of being a homebody, I'm the kind of person who doesn't like staying in one place. Hmm. I grew up traveling all around the world following my parents since they were missionaries. And so making friends, it was kind of like a shallow thing. I'd only make friends to a certain level before I'm like, all right, too deep, because I'm going to probably leave in a couple months. Hmm. And so with that, I don't make friends very well. If I do, I'll make tons of friends at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And then maybe my sister and my cousin, my mom, they will be the ones who I go in depth with because I know that they'll always be there, whether or not we're in the same country. Mm-hmm. We're always still connected.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of a flitter.
Yeah.
A little funny. Okay. That's interesting because I think so many people assume that I'm this like raging extrovert and I just love having people in my life and I love pouring into people, but I can easily trend. I get stuck. My comfort zone is getting stuck into being project oriented and accomplishing things. And then the people in my life kind of get cast aside. Mm-hmm. So I have to watch that. So when people say, because I think this is true, that like gravitates toward like, What does that actually mean for you? How does that translate in your life? So, Brandon, these little friend groups that you have, are they just all runners who like hiking and stuff like that? I mean, because that's what you're
surprisingly
into. Sports.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty close. I tend to get drawn to people. I don't have any friends that are like the polar opposite of me. And I think in some situations that can be beneficial, but the friends that I find that I get the most satisfaction from are the ones that are introverted. I think my introversion can border on some like personality disorder sometimes. Like it just seems to be so intense. But those people that recharge the same way I do, that would be just getting out for a run or being away from people, not always having to be the center of attention or at some social event. So, and then those that have the same kind of likes outside, it's always a benefit to have someone that enjoys the same hobbies as you. So if I find that person, I'm always going to be kind of drawn towards them.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well, being an extrovert, it was kind of bred into me. So whether or not I'm an extrovert or introvert, I'm not really sure. Sometimes people will energize me and I'll go crazy after being with a big group of people or at a fair where there are thousands of people. Or sometimes all I need is just to sit in a cabin by myself or in my hammock. I call it hammock. Is that weird?
Yeah, that is.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'll sit just in the mountains by myself and just need time, well, of quiet. And so sometimes that's what I need. Sometimes I really just need a giant group of people where no one knows who I am and I can just run around and make friends.
So what are ways that you guys would benefit from a stretch in any one of these areas? Like, do you look to certain people and you're like, they do that so well, or they do, or do you have a person who would be like a polar opposite that you're like, that would be a great person to get to know, but do I really have the energy or the capacity or whatever to stretch in that way? What do you guys see yourself benefiting from if you could just get over that hump?
I have a brother who's really outgoing, and I love having him in my life as a friend. So I feel like his ability to tell stories, his ability to just kind of capture a room, I gravitate towards that trait of his. So I feel like just kind of hanging out with him when I do get a chance to, I tend to be a little bit more outgoing myself. So I think it kind of challenges me to keep up with him, really.
Yeah. So do you ever feel, Micah, because you do kind of the work and then the family thing, do you ever struggle with feeling kind of unknown? I mean, if your brother is kind of the one that everyone could be like, oh, yeah, he's so funny, or he told this story, or he... And you kind of feel like, or do you not worry about that?
No, I tend not to. Well, I live kind of far away. My family's in the Midwest, and we're out here in the mountains here. So I don't really get as much time to hang out with family. So I tend not to too much, but maybe slightly. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, who else?
I think if I could find that polar opposite, I feel like it would help my confidence. I'm always told that I'm a fairly confident person, just even especially in like a work setting. But I feel half the time like I'm going to have a panic attack. And so when I see someone that's very extroverted, very willing to engage a crowd, I get jealous sometimes because I feel like that's such a, just a hard thing for me to do, that it does limit the ability for me to network or to get to know that extended group of people. And so to have someone that, I think it's a confidence, you know, if I can feel confident in myself that I'm not being judged, or I tend to jump toward the other person's impression of what they would think of me if I engaged them. So a lot of the time that stops me from engaging them because I go, oh, wait, they're not going to want to talk
to
me.
You like project the worst case scenario.
Exactly, all the time.
Yeah.
And so that's been a struggle from just that I've dealt with.
Yeah.
So I think if I could find that person that could like help me kind of to navigate past that it would open up a lot of doors that I've really probably closed on my own.
Sometimes I really wish that I was satisfied being in one place for a long time because with wanting to move, and I'm always looking up plane tickets, even though I just came back from Oregon or something, I'm looking up plane tickets, whether or not I can afford them. I'm on Google Maps if I'm at the desk going through that and seeing people who have been in one place for a long time and they have such a wonderful network of people around them that they know, and they know them in a deep level, and they have experienced lots of different aspects of life together. I don't really have that apart from my family. And so I get jealous of seeing somebody who has established roots in one place, mm-hmm. and I'm always trying to go somewhere else. And so I've got friends in Sweden and Mexico and everywhere else, but they only know me to a certain level.
Yeah.
And I don't have that network here.
You can't interact with them every day.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So when people are like, I'm going to hang out with my friends, I'm like, oh, mine are in Canada. Okay.
Yeah. So. It's funny because I've often, I think I've mentioned a couple times here on the show how Anthony on our team is so interesting as I talk to him about how this guy is has a job. I mean, he runs his own business as well. And he has a wife and two daughters. And I feel like he is out making, cultivating relationships like more than I am, and has fits in all this time for people, and is willing, and he prioritizes going deep with people. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting because he'll say, well, I have my life group, or I'm doing this book group with this group of guys, and I'm like, you're just like the poster child for like a relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel, and I often realize that if mm-hmm. I really stretched myself to really, and he also does it in a very distinct, he's very involved downtown here in the Springs with an mm-hmm. art culture and with kind of, you know, he's always hanging out in these coffee shops and building relationships with people. And mm-hmm. I'm like, how do you do all of this well? It's just mm-hmm. so fascinating to me.
Yeah. I think it's personality. Like I learned in college that I needed that time mm-hmm. just to recharge, to go watch a movie mm-hmm. by myself. Like I made it an effort to say, okay, I need to get involved. I need to try to stretch myself. But I think there is that limit, depending mm-hmm. on how you're wired, that you just, for me, I get to that point where I can't do it mm-hmm. anymore. I need to have either a good workout or some time by myself where I have to watch how much I get involved with, because I start not being able to pour into anyone
yeah,
else.
You can just shut down.
I just shut down. I become ineffective, you know, so.
Yeah, that's good. And some people, I think, are carved out to pour into a fewer people, mm-hmm. you know, more deeply or whatever, rather than being the ones that are just chit-chatting with everyone. So what would you guys say, what misperceptions, and again, we can talk about, you know, relationships, or we can even just talk about any general types of things. What misperceptions do you have that you would say are possibly just from ignorance or from not being willing to step out of your comfort zone or from not being willing to experience new things? Do you have misperceptions that kind of have come to the forefront of, you know, oh yeah, this is probably something that, you know, is not accurate or something that I'm prejudiced towards mm-hmm. because of XYZ?
I think always seeing people in my life as temporary is a really bad thing. Mm-hmm. So every friend that I meet, I just see them as a sort of a passing through, and I love people. So when they pass through, I just kind of get used to saying goodbye, and it's an easy thing because I'm used to it and I've kind of numbed myself to it. And I think that's awful, not trying to invest in, it's not good to try and keep everyone in your life all the time, mm-hmm. but it's also, I think, very valuable to have people who are not just blood related, who mm-hmm. have gone through stuff with you and they've seen you grow, and they can encourage you and you can encourage them when things go poorly, but somebody who's just been there that I don't just view as temporary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And two, Hannah, and I'm just going to ask this because I just barely even know you, but I just ask rude questions sometimes. So I'm just going to be, like, I'm putting it out there, I'm just going to be rude. Do you feel that you're sometimes, based on your world travels and experiences on the mission field, are you like a culture snob? Like, do you judge people because they don't know languages or they don't know about other cultures or they don't, and you're just like, seriously, like, there are other people out there?
I totally do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do that all the time when people, recently we were planning a vacation and these people were offering to fund the vacation to this beautiful place in Mexico. And other people who were traveling with us, they said, oh, that hotel looks a little sketchy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to stay there. And it was like this private condo. I'm mm-hmm. thinking, what on earth? I've slept on the floors of churches in Mexico and mm-hmm. been friends with the bartenders across the street. And so me seeing the culture as having been immersed in it, and then with people who just know what they see on the news, mm-hmm. I get really mad. Like sometimes it's super uncalled for how mm-hmm. angry I get. But I'm like, wait, some of my best friends live across the street. They are not the sketchy people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do that all the time. Like,
yeah.
You know, not everyone in Mexico is going to try and kill your mom. So,
yeah.
Luckily.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends are there.
Yeah. No, true. Any mm-hmm. other misperceptions that you guys identify in yourself that you're kind of like, I could benefit probably from an attitude change?
I know I went through one before we moved to Colorado. I grew up kind of in the suburbs of St. Louis. And at one point, I think it was like the second year I was married, my wife and I moved into the city. Mm. And that was a big deal. Yeah. South City, which is a little nicer area of St. Louis, but still in the city. And that had a completely different connotation, kind of. There's the whole perspective growing up in the suburbs. Moving in the city was kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't have done it except for some of our friends from church lived in the city. Hmm. And they actually found us a house to rent practically across the street from them. And I thought, well, if they can do it, we can do it. So it still was a bit of a stretch, but just getting to know the people who live down there downtown, not just our friends across the street, and you know, just shopping, just getting my groceries there, and just, you know, kind of changed my whole view of living in, you know, in the city like that. So
that's interesting, because when I lived in Minneapolis, I lived in South Minneapolis, and went to Bethlehem Baptist, which is John Piper's church. And he was very, and I'm assuming this is still the case, but when I was there, the staff of the church was required to live around the neighborhood of the church, which is actually in a not great part of Minneapolis. It's very close to the Metrodome and kind of, you know, is a little ghetto-y. With some projects nearby, and they were like, the church ministry was Bible studies in the high rises, you know, working in those soup kitchens, doing that. And he was very intent about this. This is not going to be a bunch of rich people driving in from the suburbs to hear me preach. This is going to be a working, breathing, active church in this community. And I remember that had quite an impression on me through that. But what else? Any other misperceptions or?
I use Malcolm Gladwell term, thin slice, just small groups usually in general. And I don't know why I do it, but I think I get this whenever I'm invited or whenever I see one, I just make this judgment that it's going to be a bunch of super outgoing, extroverted people that are just going to be, you know, way more spiritual than I am. And they're going to point me there. As soon as I walk in the room, they're going to know, like, this guy's, you know, again, jumping to the worst conclusion about myself. And so that's kept me away from a lot of possible ministry spiritual growth, is that I just say, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to make myself vulnerable or put myself in that situation. But the groups that I have gone in and been a part of have been very beneficial to me. So I think that's the biggest thing is to try to get by that.
Yeah. That reminds me so much of a youth group experience, like in high school, where I went to a small church. My family was always the one helping plant the small churches, which was horrible when you're in youth group, because you go to like the national conference and it's all the mega churches that have their awesome, like super programmed youth groups. And then you're like the three kids, you know, who are like the outcasts or whatever. And I remember walking into like the gyms full of kids, and it was always like dodgeball or volleyball. And it was just so overwhelming to me to see, how am I going to break into this over, you know, populated clique of kids that are going to hate me, and how am I going to assert myself, and oh my goodness. And I feel like even as an adult, you have that youth group recurring nightmare of how are these people going to relate to me. Okay, so really quickly as we close out, anyone who wants to weigh in on what are some ways that you've grown in this area or that you would like to grow? What do you see as your next step to really saying, this is going to build towards my maturity as a person, towards my ability to love others, pour into others, my ability to stretch here? Mm-hmm. What about growth? What does that look like for you? If you had to pick, say, the next 3 to 6 months growing in this area?
Well, I feel like one of my comfort zones, or I guess one of my non-comfort zones, is speaking in front of large crowds of people. And I find that if I feel the Spirit kind of leading me to do so, one, I tend to fight it. But as soon as I get over the fact that I'm going to lose that fight and I actually open my mouth, afterwards, I feel so, like, what was I worried about? You know, I kind of have a peace about that. So I feel like that's
awesome.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just the mind. It's the mind game, you know, being able to overcome that. And your own worst enemy is usually yourself in those situations. So being able just to trust God, I think trust is a big thing too. And to step around that, because I've been in the same situation of when you finally get comfortable, you kind of take that step of faith, you're always rewarded for it, whether it's in your own life or it's for someone else that you're able to bless.
definitely.
And Hannah just has to stop looking at plane tickets.
I know.
People here.
Yeah. So speaking in front of large groups isn't an issue for me. You guys just saw me give a tour. And
that's true.
It was a pretty big tour for today, for the winter. But it's when individuals from my tours come up and start talking to me, and they're like, so tell me about your whole life. I'm like, oh, well, I, you know, yeah. I'll tell all of you, but not just you.
Yeah.
Just gather some friends.
Cool. Well, thanks, you guys, so much for being part of this conversation.
Sure.
Good
sure.
stuff.
All eyes on you. Well, folks, we are here for our culture segment, and I'm very excited to welcome back to the table Glenn Stanton. Hey, Glenn.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. As you all know, Glenn, he's been on the show many times. He's one of our own here at Focus on the Family, our marriage and parenting and general family researcher and expert on basically all things having to do with focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except for our cafeteria. Well, you might be an expert on that, too.
Maintenance
issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Glenn is also, and we've had him on to talk about a number of his different studies and writings. But right now, he is the just published author of Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. And I love this cover.
Well, thank
it's just,
you.
It's bright and cheery because it utilizes the rainbow.
Yeah.
Which I do like.
Exactly.
It's just cool. It's
little
cool
houses.
I know.
Those are Monopoly
neighbor
games.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's interesting because you know this, when you're doing a book cover and they'll send you like four versions, that's the first one I rejected.
This
and then
one?
We came around to where, you know what, we actually do like it.
Yeah.
So
it's really
worth the price of the book, just the cover.
Just to have the cover.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, we're going to actually go ahead and look at some of the themes in this book today. And you know that we here at The Boundless Show love keeping it real.
Sure.
So we are talking largely to an audience that is in this space, whether they are at school with gay and lesbian friends, they have folks in their family, they themselves struggle with same-sex attraction, they are working with gay and lesbian coworkers, have a sibling or aunt or uncle or cousin, whatever. It is just, I feel like millennials and Xers are really in this space. We are living this. And so I'm excited to break it down. And you and I have talked about our stories with our gay and lesbian friends. And so I think this conversation's going to be awesome. So the first question I want to ask you, just kind of kicking off the conversation, because I think much of this hinges on, you know, we have this conversation around how do you balance grace and truth? How do we stick to what the Bible says and say we believe it and not be ashamed of it, but at the same time, truly show Christian love to those who are very much differing from us, not only in practice, but in ideology? And so why do you think, Glenn, is disagreement on this issue equated with hate? I mean, I have a number of friends who I disagree with on a bunch of things, and we can disagree very passionately about stuff, but it never like gets personal or it never gets ugly.
Yeah.
But when I disagree on this issue with gay and lesbian friends or with friends who are heterosexual, but side on the whole, they're for same-sex marriage or they're just for whatever. Why is this issue such a lightning rod?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you think about any other issue in our culture today, even abortion, that if you disagree with somebody, then that means that you hate them mm-hmm. or you're rejecting them. Mm-hmm. And I talk about it in the book. Disagreement is not discrimination. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, it has a bit to do with the way this issue has been positioned by many in the gay and lesbian community. Real quick story. There's an anthropology professor at a pretty well-known college, and when she was doing her graduate work, she befriended a lesbian woman, and the lesbian woman invited her, "Why don't you come to a gay bar that I hang out with a couple of my friends?" And, you know, this is a good Christian girl. She had never been to any kind of bar, but she wanted to reach out to her friend. And so she went. And then her friend asked her, she said, "Now that I've got you on my turf with my friends, let me ask you, what is it that Christianity believes about homosexuality?" And this woman, I mean, shocked, put on the spot, embarrassed. She answered wonderfully, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, just in a beautiful way. But then her friend said, "Well, if that's what you believe, then I can't be friends with a bigot." Hmm. And the woman, the Christian woman, felt very bad. She said, "I defended my faith. Why didn't my faith defend me?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "I just felt like my friend heard judgment from me." Well, mm-hmm. the issue is, she asked you a question. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't ask questions that you may not want the answer to. Two, bigots typically do not befriend mm-hmm. gay and lesbian individuals, nor are they willing to step out of their comfort zone and go to a gay bar. So this kind of really mean and manipulative accusation that mm-hmm. if you don't accept me, then you must hate me. Mm-hmm. In many ways, and I don't mean this horribly negative, but in many ways, that's how children behave. Mm-hmm. You know, let me do what I want to do. And if you don't, then you must hate me.
Yeah.
We need to call that and just say, you know what, we can disagree and actually love and esteem one another.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we have, you know, Christians on this side of the crazy, too. I mean, to the extreme of, you know, these self-described, you know, you've got the Westboro Baptist folks who yeah. are believing that they're doing this biblically and in the name of Jesus, and there's all kinds of crazy going
on. And who have come here to pick at us at Focus.
Right, because we're not anti-gay enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
okay, seriously? So, yeah, I mean, it's just there's all kinds of that. And I think we could, but Christians can, knowing that we, you know, have, you know, Jesus Christ, we have the Holy Spirit, we have, I mean, we are, I think we can raise the bar on this conversation, and we can make, set the example, really, of, like you said, coming forward with the truth, putting it on the table, but having that dosed out in a measure of love that's
yeah.
real, that's genuine.
The
not
world
just
is
saccharine.
Not called to love their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
We are. In fact, we are not even only called and commanded to love our neighbor. We are called to love our enemies.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and that puts us as Christians on a much higher level. And we've got to understand that these two false divides that we've created on this issue, and that is either, you know, absolute, uncritical, out-of-hand rejection and condemnation, or on the other hand, let's just put our differences aside and act like there is no difference.
Everything's okay.
Let's put our differences aside and act like, yeah, everything's okay. When actually there's a third way in the middle there, and that is to treat the person always with grace, but treat the issue itself always in truth.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about, you know, because I alluded at the front end of the segment, how you and I have gay and lesbian friends. You, by nature of what you do here at Focus, have built a number of relationships with specifically some gay guys, because you end mm-hmm. up debating them.
Mm-hmm.
You go to college campuses a lot and are kind of put in, you know, point counterpoint type debates. And as a result, you know, it's kind of like when your speaker's on a panel, and you and I know this, you know,
yeah.
you kind of, you hang out in green rooms together, or mm-hmm. you end up, you know, eating together or whatever, and
yeah.
so you develop a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about a couple of those friendships, how they've played out, and where, like, if there was the potential or any actual tension, how you've kind of had to wrestle with exactly what you said, that balance of grace and truth?
Yeah, and you do develop those relationships, and even in the sense of, okay, we're debating this issue. We're going to go on a stage in a minute, mm-hmm. you know, and really go at each other. But I want to show you, as a Christian, and particularly a guy from Focus on the Family, that I can like you. Mm-hmm. I can enjoy you as a person, and I mm-hmm. want to get to know you. I can use all the friendships I can get. and many people go, well, you know, what if your relationship hits difficulties? It's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. And there have been a number of issues like that, of, you know, some of the friends, the guys that I have befriended, we will offend one another, mm-hmm. you know, by not realizing that what you say and how you say it is offensive. And we'll have to deal with that, mm-hmm. you know, and explain why it's offensive. I need that explained to me, and then apologize and to mm-hmm. think about it. But then also to say, you know what, I don't know a better way to say that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just going to have to deal with that mm-hmm. From me. One particular incident is with a friend of mine, John, who lives up in Detroit, and we had an event there. And he said, when you come, why don't you come stay at my house with me and my partner, Mark, who I had met and, you know, really a nice guy. And I said, you know, absolutely, I would love to, because I wanted to extend to him, you know, showing I don't think you have cooties. I want to take you up on your offer of hospitality. But then, you know, I started to think, given my position and, you know, given who I am in this work and in this movement, I want, you know, maybe that's not a good idea. So I asked a number of friends, you know, okay, I've got this invitation to go stay at the home of my gay friend and his partner. I mean, think about that, you know, mm-hmm. listeners. What would you do? Mm-hmm. And so I asked a number of friends, and I got conflicting answers, and finally had to ask the person I was under authority of, and he said, "No, I don't think that's such a good idea." And he said, "You know, you've always got to avoid the appearance of evil." I said, "Well, it's not evil. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. just staying over there." But in the end, I had to honor him, my supervisor, and I had to tell my friend, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't. And it was one of the most difficult conversations I've ever had with anybody, because it hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm. It made him feel like it was about him, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. So that was a difficult thing. And difficult things are going to come up, but that is what friendship helps us move through.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting, because I'm just thinking of a similar instance I had, you know, and thinking of that instance, it shows how, not that we, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, homosexuality, we peg it as this super sin or whatever. But I do think it is something so deeply tied to identity
yeah.
that when you do make a decision like that, and like you said, you know, disagreement is not discrimination, it's so personally wounding.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I think of how we're so prone as a Christian community to make everything about our sexuality. Not even a Christian mm. community, just the world.
Yeah.
It's like we identify as our sexuality. And like mm-hmm. I've had people, you know, young adults, Boundless listeners, who are like, I will not be able to go to my grave not having had sex. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, really? Like, that's the biggest thing about you? I mean,
yeah.
that, because
yeah.
if that's the case, well, then I guess I'm sunk, because I'm just ticking away my time. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah.
but we're just so prone to define ourselves in that way. And so that's why I think, like, I have a, you and I have talked about my gay friend David, who was my trainer for a while, mm-hmm. and how I actually walked with him. I was training with him when he went through the breakup of a long-term mm-hmm. relationship,
mm-hmm.
and the tears and the grieving and the agony and the sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to be there for him and listen to him while, like you said, not
yeah.
saying that I agreed with
yep.
his relationship or anything, but the fact is, that partner was real to him and was a personal, I mean, that was a relationship. That was a, and I think we do.
And he's a suffering person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't mean that that guy was any less to him, or that that relationship was any, you know, the feelings weren't valid mm-hmm. and stuff. And so what I was there was, I was helping and listening to a grieving friend.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ascribing to, you
yeah.
know, the merits of homosexuality.
And he knew where you stood.
Oh, he absolutely knew.
And he didn't think you being kind to him were like, oh, maybe Lisa's softening on this issue.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, I think he hoped for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he still hopes for that probably. But, you know, that's the thing is I'm very clear on what I believe, and that's a biblical framework for sexuality, but then I backfill it with the relationship. And it's interesting because a couple of my friends who are gay and lesbian have actually come around and said, you know, wow, you're not as much of a freak as I thought
exactly.
you were originally.
Because
we find common ground on other things and we make it not about
that. And it's not that you stop being a freak when you get around her. It's those stereotypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of this whole issue is, okay, you've got stereotypes about me as a Christian and me and many of my Christian friends have stereotypes about you as a gay individual.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's talk about those
and
let's understand what stereotypes are true and which are not true. But that's very critical. And that's the point that I talk about in the book, Lisa, is we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We can walk in these nuances of, I love you as an individual. I'm happy when you're happy. I'm sad when you're sad. But you can't expect me to give up on my personal convictions, nor can I necessarily expect you to give up on your convictions.
Right. Now, let's just talk briefly here about what are really some of the dumbest things that Christians say and do when it comes to interacting with gay and lesbian friends. I mean, from what you've heard from your friends who are gay that are just like, you know, you're not really winning any points here.
Right.
In convincing me of any kind of friendship or love. I know there are phrases that are kind of hot buttons. I know there are other things.
I mean, one of the big ones, and you know, there are some gay and lesbian individuals who use this term themselves, but I was living the lifestyle, or what is it like to be in the gay lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this in the book. You know, living at the beach is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Liking to sail is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Liking to go antiquing is a lifestyle. This, they don't see it that way. This is what I am. It's who I am. Now, there's no real science whatsoever that says people are born this way. They're just not. But they see this as a bigger identity. So when we say, you know, the gay lifestyle or you living that lifestyle, it seems to undercut. It would be like, so, you know, when did you start living the Christian lifestyle?
Yeah. You know? Living the single lifestyle, quite frankly. I mean,
yes,
it's the same thing.
Exactly.
So that brings me to another point. I think one of the other things you mention is to constantly be harping on how gays have just chosen this, quote, lifestyle.
Right.
You just choose to be this way. You choose. And for many of them, they feel it is not a choice.
Right.
It is very, they can't even, I mean, I have friends who cannot remember the first time they were same-sex attracted. And they are literally just like, I was born this way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think for us to just hang our hats on that and harp on it is probably going to be self-defeating.
Well, and what does the research say? There is just no research whatsoever, and it's not from a lack of trying to find this one drive that, okay, there's a such thing as a gay person, just like, you know,
the formula.
But nor is it just a choice where if, you know, you're cruising down the road of life and you see a fork in the road and, wow, I'm going to try this, you know, road the less traveled. But the reason many feel like, well, you know, I've always felt this way, I must have been born this way, is, yes, these things develop and can develop at very early ages. But still, I mean, the other thing is, can you be homosexual and a Christian? Absolutely. Can you be a sinner and a Christian? Absolutely. The thing that you can't do is you can't succumb to homosexual attraction, homosexual desires, just like I can't, as a married man, succumb to my desires for women who are not my wife. Single individuals cannot, heterosexuals cannot succumb to their desires for people they're not married to. The same is true for the homosexual person. But you can be, you can have same-sex attraction and be obedient to a Christian sexual ethic as Christ teaches us, and please Christ in every regard. I mean, that's Christian discipleship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, in fact, I think it was Kathy Keller when I interviewed Tim and Kathy, and they were talking about singleness and the gay individuals in their church or same-sex attracted, you know, who choose to do that. They live as celibate, you know, believers in light of that. And she referred to one of the guys had self-described as like his disordered sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he's saying, you know, God messed up and God can't control this and God can't change him. He fully believes that God can, mm-hmm. but it's kind of similar to, I may be single, feeling called to marriage, but because of many cultural things that have happened through the generations, people, there are singles who want to be married who are not married.
Right.
And as a result, I am not married, but it does not give me license to act out sexually. It doesn't make me a less of a sexual person or that I can't be feminine. So again, I think it's kind of parsing out the differences there.
But, and many in the gay community will say, so you're saying that because of Christianity, I cannot live a full sexual life. Mm-hmm. And that would be like you saying, yes, I'm telling that you can't live that way. But, oh, yeah, there's me as a single person.
Right.
I can't live that way either.
Right.
What makes your story any different than mine?
Or the marriage. I mean, we're all under constraints. We're all, none of us are allowed to live unbridled in sin. So I think
another, you know, kind of thing we get wrong and is the line, love the sinner and hate the sin. Mm-hmm. And we mean very nice things by that.
Mm-hmm.
And we mean something very kind by that. But we need to understand, and Christians always need to understand, how does it sound to the other person?
Mm-hmm.
And we can make the distinction between the sin and the sinner. But the gay person, as well as, you know, people in any other situation, if you're saying that what I do is unacceptable, then you're saying I'm unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if atheists were to say about Christians, hate the irrationality, love the irrational.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you're calling me irrational.
Yeah.
What, you know, I don't take that as a very good kind of compliment. We need to understand that. But I would say all in all in that, little cliches that we as Christians use are just never really helpful.
Right. Well, and also, and of course, we're here at the end of our time, so you guys are going to have to jump on the blog and weigh in on this conversation. Again, it comes down to so many of us are just not even legitimately or really in the sphere of our gay and lesbian friends. Mm-hmm. We're so prone to just separate or to put them at arm's length and stuff. And I mean, I want to know, you know, y'all that are listening, weigh in on the blog. Where, you know, do you have a relationship with that coworker that you stand by the coffee pot every day and chat with? Or maybe it's a sister or brother, or how are you guys engaging right where you are? Glenn and I would love to hear that. So again, the book is Loving My LGBT Neighbor by Glenn Stanton, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. Glenn, thanks so much for opening up the discussion for us.
Thank you, Lisa.
It's so easy to look around and feel like the sky is falling down. Yeah, I don't wanna get caught up feeling like I don't have enough when you have given me so much, much, yeah.
Well, we are wrapping up this week's Boundless Show with our inbox segment. And once again, we have Candace Waters, founder of Boundless.org, here to answer our question. Welcome, Candace.
Thanks, Lisa.
Great to have you. All right. Well, this listener has a very good question. This girl says, once a year, my Christian school hosts an event where it's tradition to have the girl ask the guy out. This seems to go against everything I've been taught about dating. But is this one night a year just harmless fun, or could this be degrading for a relationship?
Well, my first thought was, it does go against everything that I think about, too, when it comes to biblical dating. But I thought I should ask Steve what he thought, and he said, well, you know, it's just an event.
Mm-hmm.
So I may have overreacted in my initial response. Thankfully, I have that counterbalance in a husband to say, I don't think that if you do this one event it has the potential to unravel all that you believe about biblical dating, so we shouldn't overinflate the problem here.
And you won't necessarily lose your salvation, because I was wondering.
Right.
Okay, just checking.
You will definitely not lose your salvation.
Okay, I wanted to clarify. Awesome.
Yeah, no, it was, no. A couple of things to ask yourself. Okay, is this a once-a-year event, or is this an event that is still a holdover from another era when this really was the exception and not the norm? So if you go to a school where the culture of the school is that girls are asking guys out all the time, then this is just kind of a, you know, wink, wink, hey, let's all pretend we don't already always do this. But if you go to a school where this really is an anachronism, where really this is out of the ordinary for the girls to be asking the guys, then I think you can, you know, enter in and say, wow, isn't this kind of quaint? We still live in a culture and a place that is so unlike the society at large, where we generally, by and large, do wait for the guys to ask us out, and you can kind of have fun with it. So that's one way of looking at it, just as kind of a barometer to ask, what is the culture at your school? Another thought that came to mind is that you don't want to get your hopes up that finally you get to ask out that one guy that you just have pinpointed as your future one, you know, your one and only, and this, he's never asked you out, he's never noticed you, but now that you can ask him out, it's all going to be awesome, and, you know, you'll ride off into the sunset. I would just encourage you not to get your hopes up like that, because, you know, this one event where things are upside down is probably not going to lead to marriage. If it does, you know, great, but for the most part, it's just an event. It's just a fun kind of a, you know, an activity to do. And don't go all crazy and you know, change your whole worldview because of it. Don't overmake it. Don't undermake it. Just don't put all your hopes in it.
And don't go and ask a guy out and then be like, but by the way, this isn't something I really believe in on a regular basis, and I need you to read these 12 articles to indicate exactly
where. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't go psycho on him, right? Unless
it's a way of introducing him to Boundless, then I'm all for that, because I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Here's your entree right here to just get into the nitty gritty. But no, I'm just teasing.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's one challenge. Okay. Here's one thing to consider. Let's say you decide you're going to do this. Okay. First of all, I do want to say, if this really bothers you and it's against your convictions and you think it's fundamentally wrong and violates biblical principles to ask a guy out, even for an event like this, then if it violates your conscience, then for you to do it would be sin. So don't do it. There's no shame in saying, you know, this bugs me, I'm just not going to participate. But you don't need to make this into a huge boycott. You're not going to change, you know, the minds of everybody at your school. Just quietly don't participate. So that's one thought. Another thing to consider, though, is if you do it, ask the guy, you know, send him an email, or ask him, better yet, ask him when you see him, hey, you want to go with me to that flip-flop event on Friday? But when you get to the event, don't become the guy. Don't hold his door open for him. Don't do a total role reversal just because you initiated the invitation. That would be my advice. Still be every bit the godly feminine woman and let him be the man. Don't get in his way of leading and try to take the reins just because you initiated with the invitation.
Yeah. All right. Well, great idea there, and certainly some things that our listener can take away and hopefully apply. And don't forget to have fun, too, if you're the one that wrote this question. Do have fun.
That's what Lisa's good for. Let's remind. Everybody needs to be reminded by Lisa. Just have fun already.
Just have fun. Do not marry this guy that night, okay? So, yeah. Excellent advice.
Don't overthink it.
Excellent advice, Candace. All right, folks. That is it for this week's show. Write to us at editor@valmas.org, and we will answer your question in the future. Drop a line and say hi. Make sure you're introducing the show to friends and that you're staying with us each week as we cover a new topic for single young adults. I am your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.